Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier. It's Wednesday, January 27th, and I'm your reader, Bob Young. Today, The Courier is forecasting a mostly cloudy day with some flurries, wind from the north between 6 and 12 miles per hour, and we'll see a high of 20 degrees. Tonight, it goes down to minus 4, and there'll be a moonlit sky, and it'll be very cold. Winds from the north between 3 and 6 miles per hour. Looking around the region, mostly cloudy today with a couple of flurries. Bitterly cold tonight with a moonlit sky. Be mindful of the risk of hypothermia and wear protective clothing. Times of sun and clouds tomorrow and Friday. Our stories on the front page include school choice bills on fast track, winter storm wallops Waterloo, county supervisors cut epidemiologist position, and we'll begin with county to offer seniors vaccine. Those 65 and older could get shots by the middle of February. Stories filed by Sydney Sizon, and it opens with a photograph of a healthcare worker preparing a vaccine shot. Waterloo. Black Hawk County residents ages 65 and older can expect calls from healthcare providers about when they can get COVID-19 vaccines, Health Department Director Nafisa Nisi-Ibonye announced on Tuesday. The healthcare providers include Unity Point Health Allen Hospital, Mercy One Northeast Iowa, and People's Community Health Clinic. Ibonye said state officials anticipate more COVID-19 vaccine in the middle of February. People will be asked to schedule appointments to get vaccinated, and walk-in requests will not be accepted. Quote, do know behind the scenes, we're moving as fast as we can in terms of planning and also communication so that everybody is aware of what's going on, Ibonye said. County health officials plan to split the number of COVID-19 vaccine allocations in half, with 50% going to people 65 and older, and the other 50% going to essential workers. The strategy falls in line with state recommendation. The state's next recommended priority group includes people 75 and older, manufacturing workers, some educators, child care workers, and first responders, among others. Ibonye said pharmacies plan to vaccinate essential workers and health care systems will handle the older population. She said pre-existing conditions will not be a factor in determining who gets the vaccine first, noting that gathering documentation to provide conditions could make the process, quote, too complicated. The health department plans to set up a call center to answer resident inquiries about the vaccine. It will include arranging for people without health care providers to get vaccinated, Ibonye said. Quote, I know people are eager to know where they can get their vaccine, and I'm very excited to see that people are interested in the vaccine, Ibonye said. We're just finalizing the logistics. The information was shared Tuesday with the County Board of Supervisors. Ibonye said the Health Department website will eventually allow people to sign up for updates if they are interested in the COVID-19 vaccine. This would include business owners who want their staff to get vaccinated. Quote, we just want to make sure we have all our ducks in a row, so that there is no confusion for community members and for our providers, Ibonye said. Winter Storm Wallops Waterloo, filed by Jeff Reinitz, and begins with a photograph of a man with a shovel, and the caption says, Snow blankets the plaza at State and East 2nd Streets in Cedar Falls during a winter storm on Tuesday. Waterloo, a winter storm walloped the Cedar Valley, disrupting travel and bringing much of life to a standstill Tuesday morning. Both Waterloo and Cedar Falls Community Schools canceled classes Tuesday, and many businesses closed for the day as well. There were closures of several Iowa coronavirus testing sites on Monday, including in Waterloo. That site opened 2 hours late on Tuesday morning. Cedar Falls received 8.7 inches of snow Monday night and Tuesday, while Waterloo's total remained a bit of a mystery. An original report of 10.5 inches is under review. There's some question as to whether that's correct or not, said Mark Schnackenberg, chief meteorologist at KWWL-TV, quote, the National Weather Service is talking to the observer, the final total will come down a bit, probably closer to what was reported in Cedar Falls. LaPorte City reported 9 inches of snow, Rhinebeck 7.5 inches, and Waverly 7 inches. National Weather Service meteorologist Taylor Nicolaysen, who is based near Omaha, Nebraska, said up to 15 inches were reported in spots between York, Nebraska, and Des Moines. He said it's uncommon for the region to get more than a foot of snow from a single storm, and it has been decades since some cities saw that much. Quote, a lot of people tend to misremember snow events, especially from when you were a kid. Everything felt like a foot of snow when you were a kid, Nicolaysen said. Quote, the snow drifts were literally higher than your head when you were a kid, but that's because you were 2.5 feet tall, unquote. The storm made travel treacherous in places as wind-whipped snow piled up. Interstates were temporarily closed in western Nebraska and in Wisconsin near Milwaukee because of crashes Tuesday morning, and scores of flights were canceled at airports across the region. Officials urged drivers to stay off the roads. In York, Nebraska, roughly 250 semi-trailers waited out the storm at Petro Truck Stop alongside Interstate 80. In the south, one person was dead, and at least 30 others were injured after a tornado carved a path of destruction north of Birmingham, Alabama, on Monday night, leaving the area with crumpled buildings and downed trees. In the southwest, more than a foot of snow fell in the mountains of Southern California, Nevada, and Arizona. Icy conditions in mountains north of Los Angeles shut Interstate 5 and Tejon Pass and State Route 58 in Tehachapi Pass. A storm buried northern Arizona in snow while sending flurries to the outskirts of Las Vegas and Phoenix. Most of Nevada was bracing for another series of powerful winter storms that could bring several feet of snow to the mountains above Lake Tahoe by Thursday. Preliminary snowfall reports from the latest storm included 14.2 inches at the Flagstaff Airport and 16 inches at Payson between Sunday night and late Monday, the Weather Service said. Iowa school choice bills moving quickly, filed by Rob Bossart, and begins with a photograph of Senator Pam Jochim. Des Moines. Legislative Republicans pushed a state-funded private school scholarship program closer to floor debate Tuesday during a week Governor Kim Reynolds proclaimed to celebrate school choice. One day after the Senate Education Committee narrowly approved the governor's plan to provide up to $5,200 state scholarship for private or homeschooling costs, the Senate Ways and Means Committee voted 9-6 to approve 2 tax-related elements of the bill and return it to the debate calendar. The Appropriations Committee is slated to take up the measure Wednesday, the last hurdle, before bringing it to the full Senate as early as Thursday. The House made some unusual procedural moves Tuesday to keep the proposal moving forward. Democrats expressed concern Iowans are not getting a chance to analyze a proposal setting up private school vouchers with taxpayer money. Quote, this is, quite frankly, a very radical departure for public education, said Senator Pam Jochim, a Democrat from Dubuque, during Tuesday's Senate committee meeting. Quote, the public should have time to weigh in on these important changes in policy affecting public education in our state, Jochim said in an interview. Quote, obviously, the faster they move it, the less chance there is for pushback from the public that's not happy with this kind of change, because it will take about $54 million and shift it from public education to private, unquote. She questioned making such a move when schools are facing additional expenses and dealing with COVID-19. Reynolds has said the bill has the potential to, quote, raise the quality for all schools, public and private, unquote. The governor's staff estimates the bill initially would cost up to $3 million, even though about 10,000 students attending 34 public schools that are receiving support under the federal Every Student Succeeds Act would qualify for the scholarship fund. Democrats are pushing for a fiscal note from the nonpartisan Legislative Service Agency to fully understand the budget implications. Quote, "The numbers don't add up," said Jochim. Reynolds' bill proposes three elements of school choice by establishing state funding for students in struggling public schools who wish to attend a private school, creating a charter school program, and allowing students to transfer out of schools with voluntary or court-ordered diversity plans. Senator Amy Sinclair, Republican of Allerton, chair of the Senate Education Committee, said the legislative pace of the bill has been appropriate to give Iowans enough time to provide their input since Reynolds talked of school choice plans in her January 12th condition of the state address. Under the provisions approved Tuesday by the Senate Tax Writing Committee, families that deduct 25% of up to $1,000 spent per child for textbooks and tuition on their state income tax returns would be allowed to deduct 50% of the first $2,000 spent per child. Also, the bill doubles the deduction teachers can take on their state income taxes for some out-of-pocket expenses, from $250 now to $500. Also on Tuesday, members of the House Education Committee voted 15-7 to approve legislation that would require all Iowa schools to provide a 100% in-person instruction option. Quote, "As Iowa reopened its schools in the fall, the learning experiences have not been equitable for our children. National studies show that keeping kids out of the classroom has resulted in considerable learning loss," said Representative Phil Thompson, a Republican from Jefferson. Majority Republicans rejected amendments aimed at extending the time for school districts to comply so they can address bus schedules, staffing needs, and other changes. If passed, the message would take effect no later than the second Monday after enactment. Parents and students would be given at least 5 days to decide what kind of instruction they wish to receive. Democrats tried unsuccessfully to provide that state public health officials devise a COVID-19 vaccination plan for schools to protect teachers, students, staff, bus drivers, and others. The measure would still allow a waiver process if a district were hit with a viral outbreak. Black Hawk County supervisors cut epidemiologist position from the health department. Story filed by Sydney Sizon and opens with a photograph of Health Department Director Nafisa Sisi Ebonye as she attends a Board of Supervisors meeting on Zoom on January 26, 2021. Waterloo, the Black Hawk County Health Department will be short one of its planned disease prevention experts. The Board of Supervisors voted 3-2 on Tuesday to cut funds for an epidemiologist, a medical professional who studies disease patterns. The decision comes during the COVID-19 pandemic that claimed the lives of more than 240 local residents and infected more than 14,000, according to data. The position would be the second epidemiologist at the local health department. Supervisors Tim Little, Dan Trelka, and Craig White voted to cut funding for the position. Linda Leyland and Chris Schwartz voted against defunding the role for the next fiscal year. The fiscal year starts July 1st. Leyland suggested learning more about the need for the positions, but ultimately said she did not want roles eliminated. Schwartz called the move irresponsible. The cut took nearly $99,000 from the health department, decreasing the overall tax rate by an additional 0.2%. The urban tax rate would move from $6.39 per $1,000 in assessed value to $6.38. The rural tax rate of $3.47 per $1,000 in assessed value would stay the same. Schwartz noted the move would save about 90 cents for homeowners with homes valued at $100,000. State Department Director Nafisa Sisi Ebonye said she does not understand the rationale for the cut. Quote, "The department will lose its capacity to prepare," Ebonye said. Quote, "Public health is in every sector of the community, and we do need a sustainable infrastructure to do our job efficiently. We do. but you don't make public health cuts during a pandemic, and you certainly don't do it when it comes to epidemiology. That's the heart of public health, unquote. An additional epidemiologist would help the health department prepare for next pandemic before it hits, Ibonye said. The position investigates diseases beyond COVID-19, including influenza, foodborne illnesses, pneumonia, cancer, alcoholism, obesity, and others. Black Hawk County experiences a disproportionate amount of diseases, Ibonye said, which heightens the importance of an epidemiologist. Black Hawk County ranks worse than 71 of Iowa's 99 counties for health outcomes, including lifespan. It ranks worse than 93 of Iowa's 99 counties for health behaviors, which include smoking, excessive drinking, sexually transmitted infections, obesity, and more. The data are available online from the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps program. Epidemiologists can compile data about diseases in the community, allowing the health department to implement preventive strategies. Turning to the Cedar Valley page, ready for some football? 7-on-7 youth football tournament could come to Cedar Falls, story filed by Amy Rivers, and begins with a picture of some young men playing football with the caption, "A player from Cedar Falls, Savages, tries to elude a defender during a recent 7-on-7 youth tournament game in Green Bay, Wisconsin." Cedar Falls. The City Tourism Board is financially helping the organizer of a 7-on-7 youth football league with his plans to bring a Midwest regional tournament to Cedar Falls. Trevor and Jennifer Bowlers of Tiffin, who founded the nonprofit Iowa 7v7 Football Inc. in 2019, had hoped to bring a state tournament to the area in 2020 until the coronavirus pandemic halted those plans. According to AAU Football, 7-on-7 is a one-hand touch league focused on passing routes, with AAU saying the sports format has experienced rapid growth in the past several years. Adam Bolander, sales and marketing coordinator with the Cedar Falls Tourism and Visitors Bureau, reached out to Trevor Bowlers, a former Iowa Hawkeyes football player in the 1990s, about bringing his tournament to Cedar Falls. Quote, "The tournament that he was looking at last year was going to be a small one at one of the junior high schools," Bolander said, "something to get it off the ground and build momentum." Bolander said he encouraged Bowlers to think bigger for 2021, saying youth sports, quote, "seems to be the in thing now when it comes to events." He wants Cedar Falls to play a big role in the burgeoning sport. Quote, "I asked how big did he want to go," he said. Quote, "How big can we make it?" Bolander recalled. The tournament Bowlers plans calls for 32 teams from states around the Midwest for the last weekend in March, bringing in around 425 participants with an estimated total attendance of around 1,500. Four age divisions from third grade through high school will play at the Unidome in Cedar Falls and at the Cedar Valley Sportsplex in Waterloo. Quote, "One of the reasons Trevor wanted the Dome was he wants these kids to have that collegiate-type feel when they're playing in this tournament," Bolander said. But the UNI Dome also costs quite a bit to rent. And ultimately, Bowler's requests for $17,800 in funding from the city's tourism board was pared down to $10,000 at last week's meeting. Nonetheless, board members were excited about the idea. Quote, "I would like to see us work with this group. I would like to see him get some tournaments started," said board director Kim Manning. Bolander said Bowlers is still working out the details, but plans to continue with the tournament based on that grant. Bowlers was unavailable for comment. Quote, "He's very grateful for that, for a new event coming to Cedar Falls. The board would even consider giving him a grant of that size," Bolander said. Waverly Council asks city to come up with citywide sidewalk infill plan. Stories filed by Amy Rivers, and begins with a photograph of Mike Cherry, city engineer in Waverly. Waverly, with several areas of the city missing sidewalks and gaps in sidewalks in a few subdivisions, the Waverly City Council has asked city staff to come up with a plan to fill in missing sidewalks throughout the city. Mike Terry, Waverly's city engineer, presented a list of sidewalk gaps to council during its monthly study session on Monday. He noted the council takes it up every other year in January, per city code. Quote, every couple of years, we go through a list of parcels that are undeveloped that should have a sidewalk, Cherry said. Quote, sometimes there's a good reason, sometimes not. The city has had a requirement for sidewalks to be built on any constructed lot in the subdivision since 2013, but not for vacant lots. Those lots, sometimes vacant for years, while owners await development, constituted the bulk of the parcels Cherry showed the council in his subdivisions, like Centennial Oaks, Stonehaven, Copper Ridge, High Point, and Rolling Hills. Others, like in Hickory Heights, Ellison, Stonehaven, and Impala, had either gotten waivers to not build sidewalk over the years despite being developed, or were not built for other reasons. In Impala, a northeast Waverly subdivision, the sidewalk ends at a vacant lot next to a farm field. Quote, this is where prior councils have said, well, there's really no urgency or pressing need to make the owner build a sidewalk, Cherry said. The council is expected to consider the 2021 sidewalk infill program at its March 19th meeting, after which lot owners would be notified and encouraged to install sidewalk at their own expense. If not completed by the fall of 2021, the city would install and assess owners for the cost. Quote, it's kind of council's decision. How much do you want to push the development of sidewalks? Asked City Administrator James Bronner. Ward 5 member Tim Kangas, who was absent Monday, wrote a letter read by Mayor Adam Hoffman, stating he believes the city should be more forceful with developers on installing sidewalks, even if the lots aren't built upon. Quote, to allow lot buyers to wait because it saves a little money for them is a disservice to those who have homes built, Hoffman read from Kangas's letter. But Kangas noted, quote, I would hesitate to force sidewalks until there is a comprehensive plan in place, unquote. Ward 1 member Brian Bergen said he thought the sidewalk into the cornfield probably isn't a priority, referring to the Impala subdivision, and also thought 8 vacant lots along Monaghan Drive in the Rolling Hills subdivision could also wait. Quote, but any of those places where we see 1 or 2 vacant lots breaking up the sidewalk, I think it's reasonable for us to expect a sidewalk to be put in, Bergen said. Either build something or put a sidewalk in for everyone else, unquote. Ward 2 member Chris Glazer noted the pandemic recession might put owners in a bind this year. Quote, probably right now, there are a lot of people that have the kind of funds to put in a sidewalk that could be several thousand dollars, Glazer said. At-large member Matthew Snyder agreed and said foregoing infill for 2021 could allow the city to consider a citywide plan. Quote, I wonder if this isn't an opportunity to get that on paper and see what that looks like, he said. Cherry said he could have his staff put together a draft policy that would consider several factors of sidewalk infill, including financial hardship and feasibility, and bring that before the council. Ward 3 member Rodney Drenkow said it would also have to consider older areas of the city. Quote, total infill, that's not going to work in the third ward, he said, noting it might require uprooting large old trees and other considerations. But Snyder speculated there might be ways the city staff could think outside the box and still get sidewalks everywhere. Quote, perhaps there's a creative way of getting the third ward and the whole city tucked away. I'd be in favor of that, Snyder said. Hawkeye Community College is seeking bids for a $15 million Grundy Hall renovation. Stories filed by Andrew Wind, and begins with an architect's drawing showing the interior upper level of proposed renovations for Grundy Hall at Hawkeye Community College. Waterloo. Experiential learning will be the focus of Hawkeye Community College health science programs as they all move into Grundy Hall following renovations. When completed in July 2023, the renovated hall will include primary, hands-on lab, and simulation learning spaces. The Board of Trustees Tuesday approved plans and specifications for the project. Trustees also approved seeking bids and set a public hearing for March 23rd, when a contract is expected to be awarded. Demolition, remodeling, and a small addition totaling 78,000 square feet will cost an estimated $15.5 million. Dan Gillen, Vice President of Administration and Finance, said total project costs are estimated at $22.5 million. Other expenses include $1.5 million in architect, engineering, and testing fees, $4 million in equipment and furnishings, and a $1.5 million contingency. The project will be funded with $15 million in proceeds from general obligation bonds approved by voters from Hawkeye's 10-county service area in 2015. Revenues totaling $3.5 million from the college's plant fund levy and $1 million from the equipment levy will also be used. Additionally, private donations of $3 million will go toward the project expenses. Dental and nursing programs currently are located in the building, while those for other health fields are spread across campus or at the Cedar Falls Center. All Hawkeye science classes, many of which are required courses for the programs, would also move to the renovated building. Math and social studies classes now in the building would move to other campus locations. A new dental clinic on the lower level would be in phase one of the renovations. On the upper level, the expansion would include constructing a small ambulance bay. Exterior and interior upgrades, such as a skylight, will also be part of the project. Among programs moving to Grundy Hall would be medical assisting, medical lab technology, occupational therapy assistant, physical therapist assistant, respiratory care, paramedic, and emergency medical services. Construction is expected to get underway in May. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Wednesday, January 27th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Roger D. Noe, 84, of Independence, Iowa, died on Sunday, January 24th, 2021, at Prairie Hills Assisted Living in Independence. A private family service will be held at the First United Methodist Church in Independence. The service will be live-streamed on the church's Facebook page at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, January 28th. Public visitation is 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Wednesday at the Fawcett Smith Funeral Home in Winthrop. Interment will be at Wilson Cemetery, Independence. Condolences may be directed to Sandy Johnson, 2599 Parrish Avenue, Independence, Iowa, 50644. Online obituary at jamesonsmithsfuneralhome.com. Those in attendance are required to wear a mask and social distance. Roger farmed near Rowley and worked at John Deere in Waterloo for over 30 years. William Scott Seeker, 71, of Cedar Rapids, died Tuesday, January 19, 2021, at Evergreen Estates. Private family services at St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Cedar Falls. T. Hen Funeral Home, Cedar Rapids, is serving the family. Scott was born on May 7, 1949, in Cedar Falls, the son of William and Hermina Ploger Seeker. He graduated from Cedar Falls High School in 1967. Scott worked for Kent Feeds for over 30 years, retiring in 1999. Scott was a loving father, brother, and grandfather. He was always quick with a joke or funny comeback, making others laugh and feel comfortable, and always had a smile on his face. He enjoyed his family, motorcycles, and boats, watching football, and playing on his iPad. Online condolences can be left at www.thenfuneralhome.com. Norman Norm Eugene Montgomery, age 64, passed away Saturday, January 16, 2021, at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital from complications due to COVID-19. The son of Willie and Norma, maiden name Flowers, Montgomery, Norm was born on January 28, 1956, in Waterloo. After graduating from East High School in 1974, where he was a consensus All-State and an All-American football selection, he followed his dream of continuing his football excellence by attending the University of Minnesota and later transferring to the University of Northern Iowa. Norm completed his Bachelor of Arts in Physical Education at Northern Iowa and returned to Waterloo, where he positively impacted the lives of many young people as a corrections officer with the Iowa Department of Corrections. He retired from the Department of Corrections after over 30 years of service. On May 14, 1994, he was united in marriage to Pauline Randorf. Norm was an avid sports enthusiast and became an outstanding football and basketball referee. In his early years of coaching, he led his Ferguson Field youth basketball team to a city championship. Norm took great pride in becoming an assistant football coach at East High, where he was able to guide and help develop the careers of his two younger brothers, Carl and Lou. Norm loved attending sports events, traveling, and spending time with his lifelong friends and family. He was a loving, caring husband, friend, and father. He never met a person he did not like. In addition to being recognized as one of Waterloo's finest high school athletes, Norm will also be remembered for his great sense of humor, generosity, and community service. Private family services will be held at Agerty Wyckoff Grawrup Funeral Home, located at 400 South Street in Waterloo, and their phone number is area code 319-234-6274. The funeral will be live-streamed on our Hagerty Wyckoff Grawrup Facebook page at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, February 2nd. Public visitation will be from 4 o'clock p.m. until 7 o'clock p.m. Monday, February 1st, at Hagerty Wyckoff Grawrup Funeral Service on South Street. Memorials may be directed to 202 Ash Street, Waterloo, Iowa, 50703. Online condolences may be left at www.HagertyWyckoffGrawrup.com. Moving to some Iowa news now, Joni Ernst, second impeachment of Trump is not constitutional. Stories filed by Aaron Murphy, and begins with a photograph of Senator Joni Ernst. Des Moines. U.S. Senator Joni Ernst, Republican of Iowa, said Tuesday she does not believe the second impeachment trial for former President Donald Trump is constitutional. That's despite a nonpartisan legal analysis from a congressional research group that concluded not only is the impeachment of former president constitutional, but some scholars have deemed it an essential option. Trump, a Republican, has been impeached for a second time by the Democrat-controlled U.S. House, this time for his role in inciting and failing to quell a January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol that left 5 dead, including a U.S. Capitol police officer. The impeachment trial in the Senate is scheduled to begin the week of February 8th. Ernst told reporters Tuesday that after reading scholars who have presented arguments on, quote, both sides, she does not believe the Senate has the constitutional authority to convict a former president in an impeachment trial. Later Tuesday, Ernst supported a motion in the Senate to dismiss the latest impeachment charges. Moments after senators were sworn in as jurors in the impeachment trial, Republicans forced a vote on the constitutionality of the process. 45 Republicans supported a resolution by Senator Rand Paul, Republican from Kentucky, that said the trial is illegal because Trump is no longer president. Democrats had the votes to table Paul's motion, 55-45, with the support from 5 Republicans. But the vote makes clear it is unlikely Democrats will get the 2/3 support they will need for an eventual conviction next month. Quote, I'll continue to listen to the legal scholars and understand the pros and cons, but right now I do believe it to be unconstitutional, Ernst said during a conference call with Iowa reporters. U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, a Republican of Iowa, also voted to dismiss the impeachment charges. He said Tuesday he believes the constitutional question remains unanswered. He said the U.S. Constitution outlines impeachment for the president or other elected officials and does not specifically address former presidents. Quote, "I'm not a lawyer, so it seems to me to be a reasonable argument," Grassley said Tuesday during a conference call with Iowa reporters. Quote, "But I'm going to listen to the constitutional lawyers speak about that. I think it's going to be thoroughly debated during the impeachment trial as well by both sides," unquote. According to the nonpartisan Congressional Research Service, most constitutional scholars believe Congress has the authority to impeach elected officials who are no longer in office. According to its January 15th report, the Constitution does not directly address whether Congress may impeach and try a former president for actions taken while in office. Though the text is open to debate, it appears that most scholars who have closely examined the question have concluded that Congress has authority to extend the impeachment process to officials who are no longer in office, unquote. The legal analysis also says scholars have noted if impeachment does not extend to elected officials who are no longer in office, an important aspect of impeachment, the ability to bar an individual from holding office in the future, is lost. Quote, "If impeachment does not apply to former officials, then Congress could never bar an official from holding office in the future as long as that individual resigns first," the analysis says. Quote, "According to one scholar, it is essential for Congress to have authority to impeach and convict former officials in order to apply the punishment of disqualification. Otherwise, Congress's jurisdiction would depend on the whims of the individual who engaged in the misconduct," unquote. Ernst said if Trump is guilty of any crimes, he can be held accountable in the courts. Quote, "I think it's really important that we focus on what is our role as Congress and what is the role of the Senate. That's only one avenue," Ernst said. "If the president is truly guilty of something else, we have remedies through the courts for that. So if there truly is a case there, he can still be held accountable," unquote. In Metro Briefs, Waverly Tree Work Begins. Waverly. Waverly Public Services and Leisure Services crews will begin the annual process to trim trees in the city right-of-way for clearance. Crews will be working in the northwest area of Waverly during this winter. If the homeowner wants to do their own trimming of the trees along the street, please contact Waverly Public Services at 352-6247 or Waverly Leisure Services at 352-6263, and crews will skip the address. Trees that are on private property are also covered by the same city code in terms of clearance. The tree work and trimming will occur through March 1st. Habitat education series is planned. Waterloo. The Iowa Heartland Habitat for Humanity's mission of building homes, communities, and hope will be on display during Windows on Waverly at 11 a.m. February 4th via Zoom. The educational series is offered monthly by the Waterloo Community Foundation. Ollie Parrish, Habitat's executive director, will discuss how Habitat, a local nonprofit, is addressing the community's need for decent and affordable housing. The public may join this free presentation by contacting the foundation at info@wloocommunity-foundation.org. Allen will offer legacy program, Waterloo. The Unity Point Health Allen Foundation will offer the Allen Legacy Program as a benefit to nursing education and the future of healthcare services in the Cedar Valley. The program provides financial assistance to students enrolled in the Allen College Bachelor of Science in Nursing Program and guaranteed employment at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital upon graduation and successful completion of licensure exams, along with a 3-year commitment to work at Allen Hospital in an area of need. Nursing students will receive up to full tuition reimbursement for the final 2 semesters of his or her Allen College education. To learn more, or make a gift to the Allen Legacy Program, contact the Allen Foundation at area code 319-235-3960 or visit unitypoint.org/foundation. Two men are arrested for allegedly stealing catalytic converters. Filed by Jeff Reinitz, Waterloo. Two men have been arrested for allegedly stealing platinum from church parking lots in Waterloo and Cedar Falls. Police said Chad James Clark, 48, of 1936 Howard Avenue, and Benjamin James Ranney, 41, of 308 Gilbertville Road, Elk Run Heights, were arrested after cutting catalytic converters, pollution control devices that contain the precious metal, as well as palladium and rhodium, from two church vans and a van parked at a business. Clark and Rainey were charged with two counts of second-degree criminal mischief and three counts of third-degree theft. Employees at Precision Services, 3400 Wagner Road, Waterloo, called police on Monday after a converter was removed from a 2012 Ford Econoline van sometime overnight, according to police reports. A getaway vehicle was apparently recorded by a nearby video camera. Around 3:30 a.m. Tuesday, a Precision employee spotted a car matching the getaway vehicle in the Veridian Credit Union parking lot on Ansboro Avenue. Police began following the vehicle, at which point someone inside jettisoned a catalytic converter. When officers stopped the vehicle, they found battery-operated saws and other tools. Investigators found information that linked the two to thefts of catalytic converters from church vans at Bethany Bible Chapel, 4520 Wone Street, Cedar Falls, and Celebrations First Assembly of God Church, 745 April Street, Waterloo, according to court records. Those thefts occurred earlier that night, records state. Local control at issue for Cedar Valley superintendents and bill mandating in-person school option. Filed by Andrew Wind, Waterloo. In-person learning is often the best choice for students, superintendents from the largest Cedar Valley school districts say, but they still have concern with legislation pushed by Governor Kim Reynolds that would require the option as the pandemic rages. Quote, we understand the notion from the governor that in-person is best. We've been in parallel with that stance from the very beginning, said Jane Lindemann, superintendent of Waterloo Community Schools. However, quote, we have always supported local control for those kinds of decisions, unquote. Cedar Falls Community Schools Superintendent Andy Petit agreed. Quote, I always think some of these decisions are best left to the local school boards, he said. Quote, they know their communities best, unquote. The legislature's Senate Education Committee this week debated a bill that would enact the option of full-time in-person learning at all districts starting in February for the remainder of the year. It's the way that most students in both districts have been educated since August. Unless students have opted for virtual learning, those enrolled in Cedar Falls schools have gone to class 5 days per week. The exception was several days before and after Thanksgiving, where all students moved to online learning. That's the case in Waterloo schools for students in kindergarten through eighth grade and Expo Alternative School. East and West high schools, though, started the year on a hybrid schedule, with students divided into two alternating groups that are in the buildings 5 days every 2 weeks. District officials recently made the decision that students would go full-time in person starting Monday. Quote, we have been working on that particular goal, really, since October or November, said Lindemann. But in consultation with the Blackhawk County Health Department, they decided it wasn't the right time to transition away from the hybrid model until now. Quote, we're happy that we're able to move forward, she added. We will monitor every single day to see how that decision is impacting our numbers, unquote. Petit said, quote, one of our core tenets for this school year was to do as much as we could to have students in person. It's a model, quote, that for most learners is most valuable. although some students have found online education effective, particularly considering COVID-19 safety concerns. Lindemann acknowledged that online education is not ideal. Quote, "We have been monitoring that from the very beginning, the effectiveness of our virtual learning," she said, "both for full-time online and hybrid students. Although there has been a continuum of effectiveness for online education, it has not paralleled our in-person learning. We have great numbers of students who are not participating in the virtual instruction," unquote. In those cases, students go through a probationary period that can result in their school asking them to come back to learning in person. Lindemann said she and the district bear some responsibility, too. The online program offered through Edgenuity was not quite as developed as we would have liked, she noted, requiring a lot of close work with the company. The district, quote, "missed some learning opportunities in September and October while we were still building that plane in the air for our online learners." Thanks in part to weekly meetings with the company, she said academic outcomes are trending positive for virtual students. Turning to the nation and world section, President presses Putin. Navalny, espionage are topics. Leaders agree to work on arms treaty. A story filed by the Associated Press, Washington. U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian leader Vladimir Putin held their first phone conversation as counterparts Tuesday in a call that underscored troubled relations and the delicate balance between the former Cold War foes. According to the White House, Biden raised concerns about the arrest of opposition figure Alexei Navalny, Russia's alleged involvement in a massive cyber espionage campaign, and reports of Russian bounties on American troops in Afghanistan. The Kremlin, meanwhile, focused on Putin's response to Biden's proposal to end the last remaining U.S.-Russia arms control treaty. While the readouts from the two capitals emphasized different elements, they both suggested U.S.-Russia relations will be guided, at least in the beginning of the Biden administration, by a desire to do no harm, but also no urgency to repair existing damage. The two presidents agreed to have their teams work urgently to complete a 5-year extension of the New START nuclear weapons treaty that expires next month. Former President Donald Trump's administration had withdrawn from 2 arms control treaties with Russia and had been prepared to let New START lapse. Unlike his immediate predecessors, including Trump, who was enamored of Putin and frequently undercut his own administration's tough stance on Russia, Biden has not held out hope for a reset in relations. Instead, he's indicated he wants to manage differences without necessarily resolving them or improving ties. Although the leaders agreed to work together to extend New START before it expires on February 5th, and to look at other areas of potential strategic cooperation, the White House said Biden was firm on U.S. support for Ukraine's sovereignty, while Russia is supporting separatists in the country's east. Biden also raised the SolarWinds cyber hack, which has been attributed to Russia. Reports of Russian bounties on American soldiers in Afghanistan, interference in the 2020 U.S. election, the poisoning of Navalny, and the weekend crackdown on Navalny's supporters. Quote, "President Biden made clear that the United States will act firmly in defense of its national interests in response to actions by Russia that harm us or our allies," the White House said. Biden told Putin in the phone call, first reported by the Associated Press, that the U.S. would defend itself and take action, which could include further sanctions, to ensure that Moscow does not act with impunity, officials said. On the sports page, Prep Boys Basketball, number 1 Cedar Falls answers number 5 Liberty's challenge, filed by Nick Pateros. Cedar Falls, a front-running Cedar Falls boys basketball team ranked number 1 in Class 4A, faced its largest deficit of the season Tuesday night. It didn't last long. Number 5, Iowa City Liberty, knocked down its first 6 shots and led by 9 early before the Tigers fought back. Point guard Trey Campbell complemented his team's physical presence down low with a game-high 26 points to go with high rebound and assist totals to lead Cedar Falls past Liberty 87-63 in a battle of teams that entered the night with perfect scores atop the Mississippi Division's standings. Quote, they came out and threw the first punch, and it was good for our team to face a little adversity, Cedar Falls coach Ryan Schultz said. Liberty have a lot of senior leadership on their team, so it's good to see how your team responds. Quote, we needed a test like that against a very high-powered quality team. Trailing 26-22 early in the second quarter, Campbell sparked the Tigers on a 12-0 go-ahead run to take the lead for good. Campbell converted a 3-point play off a well-executed set when he lobbed it in to Chase Corbett, who tipped the ball back for a layup. Campbell then found Corbett a perimeter lob for a layup and located Dallas Bear for a 3-pointer. Quote, I'm always a pass-first point guard, and I'll always be that way, Campbell said. I love dishing to my teammates. Ball movement was found from Cedar Falls' offense throughout the game. Corbett slammed home a handful of dunks off Carver Jensen assists as part of a 16-point effort. Landon Wolf hit 4 catch-and-shoot 3-pointers and added a spectacular dunk off the dribble through traffic during his 18-point game. Quote, we have had the most assists this year per game that we've ever had as a team, Schultz said. Quote, it's been phenomenal. Part of it is just because of the balance and different threats that we have, but guys are willing to pass it this year too and really move the ball and space it and hunt the open shot, unquote. Campbell also proved he can shoot it. The Tigers junior, who recently received a basketball scholarship offer from hometown University of Northern Iowa, hit 4 three-pointers and finished 8 of 11 from the field. Quote, his last 3 or 4 games, he has just been outstanding, Schultz said. He's impacting the game at both ends of the court and offensively in so many ways, whether it's rebounding and assists, putting pressure on the defense by getting to the rim, shooting the ball now from 3. He's just playing phenomenal basketball. Like so many opponents, Liberty was outsized by Cedar Falls at every position. The Tigers' offensive rebounding, in particular, appeared to wear on the Lightning defense as the game progressed. Quote, they owned us on the boards tonight, Liberty coach Ryan Kelly said. Quote, against a team like that, you can't give them second-chance opportunities. They shoot the ball so well, so when they got those second-chance opportunities, they made us pay. Kudos to them, because they were more physical than we were down in the block. Cedar Falls finished 33 of 60 from the field with 12 three-pointers and 8 dunks, also adding some energy inside its home gym. Liberty was led by Ira Hazeltine's 18 points, on 7 of 13 shooting. Kelby Tellender knocked down a pair of 3-pointers and finished with 12 points. After giving up 20 points in the first quarter to Liberty and trailing, Cedar Falls' intensity stepped up and the Tigers' talented team quickly went back on the attack. Quote, it starts on the defensive end and translates to the offense, Campbell said. When those two correlate, we have a lot of energy and we can really get going, unquote. In the Prep of the Week column, Denver's Smith persevered. Cyclone senior avenged 2 losses in regular season to win the state crown, filed by Nick Petteros, Denver. An unanticipated show of small-town pride completed Denver wrestler Morgan Smith's memorable Saturday, following a state championship run of redemption capped by wins over a pair of opponents that had defeated her the previous weekend. Smith was in shock, looking out the window, as her family vehicle neared the edge of Denver. A line of police cars, ambulances, and fire trucks escorted Smith through town with their sirens activated. Community members walked outside their houses late on a cool night and waved. Smith's procession ended at the school's Cyclone Center. On the way to the building, she was greeted by a kindergarten-aged wrestler and gave the child a big hug. A decent crowd gathered inside on short notice, and Smith walked out to her AC/DC pre-match playlist. Given the opportunity to address the crowd, Smith turned her attention back to the young girl she had met minutes prior and said, quote, "If you're going to do this, just go at it and have fun. Who cares that you are a girl?" Unquote. Denver wrestling coach Nate Scar hasn't treated Smith and her female teammates any different than the boys on his team. The success of the past weekend's Iowa Wrestling Coaches and Officials Association Girls State Tournament will continue to open doors to a tough sport that has long been treasured within Iowa's communities. Quote, "Being so articulate, intelligent, and such a good person, it's just awesome that she's representing Denver," Scar said. "She's an inspiration to all these young kids, girls and boys, to go out and fulfill their dreams. We need kids like that lighting the torch so these other kids can follow down the road." Riding a wave of recent success, Smith has begun to look at wrestling in college to see what opportunities are available. Quote, "If I did this in 2 years, what can I achieve in 4 more? She said. The Denver senior currently plans to teach at an elementary school and become a softball coach. Now she's also thinking about coaching wrestling. Quote, "You don't see a lot of females out there," Smith said. "My first coach was one last year. Hopefully I can do that for someone else. We'll see." And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Wednesday, January 27th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time, and you may wish to stay tuned to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, which follows shortly. And thanks so much for listening today.